Hey, it's Nathan Crane, director of the Health and Healing Club and host of the Conquering Cancer Summit. And today I am honored and excited to welcome you to a very special interview. So Donna Gates is the international best-selling author of The Body Ecology Diet, Recovering Your Health and Rebuilding Your Immunity, as well as The Body Ecology Guide to Growing Younger, Anti-Aging Wisdom for Every Generation. For the last 25 plus years, she has been on a mission to change the way the world eats. In 1994, Donna introduced a powdered blend of stevia to the U.S., and it has since become the safest and most popular natural sweetener in the world. She pioneered and championed foods like young coconut kefir and coconut oil, and even coined the phrase inner ecosystem to describe this network we now know of microbes in our gut that we know of as the microbiome. She also began teaching about the long forgotten health benefits of fermented foods to provide the diversity needed in a healthy gut. She's truly been a pioneer in this field for nearly three decades now. You know, over the past 25 years, Donna's become one of the most respected authorities in the field of digestive health, diet, and nutrition. In 2013, she completed an advanced fellowship with the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine, and Donna's extensive research and dedication to learning help her stay ahead of what's coming in the field of health and nutrition. And her latest passion is nutritional genomics, which she'll soon launch a training program that you'll learn more about. Her website is bodyecology.com. Make sure to go visit that website for great resources, as well as products and supplements and nutritional therapeutics, bodyecology.com. Donna, thank you so much for joining us here.
Thank you very much for even asking me to be on the summit, but also, you know, the topic that you asked me to do, Nathan, I was really grateful that you said, let's talk about candida, let's talk about parasites, because, you know, first of all, there's not that many people that know, I mean, they know about it. I think everybody knows about it, but at a very shallow level. So this is a great opportunity for me to share more information than most people know. So thank you for that.
Yeah, I'm excited for the depth of information that we can go into in this short time, because you're able to take, you know, decades and even, you know, centuries of information and really consolidate it down into, you know, hopefully this next 30 to 45 minutes together to help really help people understand a lot more about health and healing. So, you know, as we kind of start out here, you've clearly been a pioneer in the health and healing field and natural health field for more than two decades. And, you know, I'm really curious, what was it that led you on this path of really wanting to uncover and discover some of these secrets, these deeper, you know, unknown secrets, if you will, to health, healing, and anti-aging?
Well, I tend to be pretty passionate about things when I'm interested in something. And I actually got sick, like a lot of people do. And I wasn't going to stay that way. So I started, even as a little kid, I had a feeling that diet mattered, like somehow what we ate tied into how we felt. So I was always kind of had my antennas up looking for, you know, this person's sick, what are they eating and so on. But, and I even went to college to study to be a dietitian, but found out that was not what I wanted to be at all. You know, just they're way off base for the most part, at least they were in those days. And I got sick, I took antibiotics, and then I took birth control pills, which is very common. Most women, many women do take antibiotics for their broken out skin and then get on birth control pills, also often for skin. And I created candidiasis, but I didn't even know what that was. And it would be a long time before I did. So I tried everything, you know, every diet out there and many, many supplements. And, you know, I'd learned this and I'd learned this and I learned this, but it was really when I met Dr. William Crook that I realized that that's when I had a yeast infection. And he was a wonderful man, really went out there and, you know, did a great job in waking people up to the fact that there's this infection called candidiasis. He and Orion Truss had discovered it. And I remember he wrote a book, and I was at a Natural Products Expo, and I had this good fortune to sit out around this fountain and talk to him for a while, all by himself, just the two of us. And I remember him saying, we do not believe there's a cure for this. And I thought, well, there has to be. I'm going to find it. So I'd had all this training in food. I was macrobiotic forever, 8 years. And so I thought there has, so he had a diet. He had his own diet. And I did that diet, but it wasn't quite there. And so I thought, well, I'm just going to take everything I know and start all over again. And so that's how the Body Ecology Diet book came about. That book was actually written to overcome a yeast infection. Nobody knew much about yeast back in those days. And so, but over the years, our understanding of yeast has increased greatly. But what's frustrating to me is that you can do an organic acid test, which many, many, you know, healthcare practitioners do, and you'll constantly see this one marker, arabinose. See, the organic acid test has markers for mold and yeast. Mold and yeast are both members of the fungus family, but they're different. So the organic acid test does have a marker for that. But, and doctors see that over and over again. And I've even had doctors say to me, every single person that comes to me with an organic acid test, I see arabinose. So it must be wrong. It's got to be a mistake. And they just kind of discount it. They shouldn't, because it's a really serious infection. And I actually created a PowerPoint to make sure that I covered some of the most important points to help people see that tie-in with cancer. I would even go as far to say often candida causes cancer and causes cancer patients to die. So I think it's a conversation that needs to be had. More healthcare practitioners need to understand the seriousness of candidiasis. And anyway, so I have a little PowerPoint I prepared.
Yeah, thank you. If you want to go ahead and open that up, that'd be great. And I just want to, as you do that, I kind of want to expand upon what you just said. You know, I was out at the Cancer Center for Healing with Dr. Lee Aaron Keneally, who's actually mm-hmm. our presenting partner with this Global Cancer Symposium.
Oh, I know her. Yeah.
Entire, you know, medical team, her senior physicians and all of her medical staff who see thousands and thousands of cancer patients. And, you know, they have multiple tests in multiple rooms with multiple different types of doctors, from naturopaths to doctors of natural medicine to medical doctors, to even chiropractors. They have all these different tests. They're always looking for parasites and candida, and looking in different ways, bioenergetically, and, you know, all different kinds of testing to search for it, because they found basically across the board, from what I heard, you know, and I haven't seen their 50,000 patient case studies, but just the anecdotal information I got from interviewing and asking questions from these different doctors there, that just about every patient they see that has cancer also has some parasitic or candida infection. And it was pretty much 100% when I was.
And you know, Nathan, one way you can tell that when they do an autopsy and they open up the body, they see it in there, and everyone. And this has been true for a long, long time. Children with leukemia, for example, I actually literally have a magazine that talks about, it's a cancer magazine, oncology, and they talk about how every single child with leukemia has candidiasis. And anyway, there's a cause, like candida is actually playing a critical cause in why anybody gets cancer.
Yeah. Yeah. I know we'll get into some of the details of why, as also we'll get into details of what people can do about it. Right. So
definitely.
Yeah. So if you want to go ahead with your PowerPoint.
Share my screen.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me go. So yes, you know, candidiasis and parasites, cancer, they're all connected. Like we have parasites in our gut, and we have a lot of parasites in our gut. People have no idea the kind of parasites or how they mass together. One thing people don't understand is the length of the small intestine. So it's 20 feet-ish, you know, like it varies in people. But if you look out across the room and try to imagine 10, 20 feet, imagine all that curled up inside of you. So for about every inch and a half or 2 inches or so, it's got to turn. And so we get a lot of you know, in small intestine and even layered on top of each other. And so as we eat throughout our lifetime, we might think we're going to the bathroom, but not everything is coming out. And so things begin to grow, you know, accumulate. And then parasites, it's the perfect environment for parasites, and they reproduce. So it is a serious thing to take care of parasites. And I have recommended colonics. I know Dr. Keneally is also big on colonics. She has colonics at her center there, of course. And so if you do the colonics properly, so that you're actually beginning to get, you're actually working on the colon, but the material in the small intestine is beginning to come down, you'll begin to get large clunks of parasites because they're living in a biofilm. And when those leave, people completely change. I mean, their body reshapes, their cellulite goes away, they're far happier. Literally, their personality changes. They think better. So parasites are bad. And every once in a while, I hear people say, oh, we need some parasites inside of us. Well, the body will adapt to some, but as we get older, they're just more and more and more inside of us. And it is another factor as, you know, why do we age? Why do we, why do we get sick? Why does the immune system become weak? So there's no question parasites and candida are both playing a role. And so the candida, or doctors properly pronounce it candida or candidiasis, but people say candida, so I'll say that. So it can be systemic. It can be in the gut, or it can be systemic. And when someone has cancer, it's both. It can be both, or definitely it's systemic. So when it's local, it can be in your ears. You can have ear infections that are fungal, yeasts in your ears. There's a lot of research showing that sinuses are very often yeast. And then you, of course, women get vaginal yeast infections, and of course, it's in the gut, but also even on the skin. Like if you have toenail fungus, for example, you know, it's showing up on your toenail, but it's deep, it's in your body. So it's not just a local toenail problem. So men will have jockish, you know, I see that a lot in young men because they're out drinking a lot of alcohol, for example, they're having sex. If the woman has a vaginal infection and he has yeast infection in his genital area, they are passing it back and forth to each other. And then usually young men and women are not eating too well. They are out partying and drinking and all, just keeping it alive, never having any idea that they have a yeast infection. If you, one of the things I noticed in working with babies, they're born with it today. And one sign of that is cradle cap, which is kind of like dandruff in a baby. Dandruff is another sign of a yeast infection too. And the reason for that, for the cradle cap and for the dandruff, is a biotin deficiency. Yeast depletes certain nutrients from the body. Biotin and taurine are two ones that are depleted, two nutrients. And they do this so that they can survive. Every living organism, first and foremost, wants to survive, has very effective ways of surviving. So what is candida? Well, it is, as I mentioned, a member of the fungus family along with mold. But they're different. They're not the same thing, but they're both fungus. And so the way they work, or the way they do their damage, is both of them are producing metabolites. They're producing toxins. The mold, for example, produces mycotoxins. Aspergillus is a type of mold that produces gliotoxin, and gliotoxin suppresses the immune system. They have very amazing, clever ways to suppress the immune system so they can live, because it's really up to your immune system to get rid of them. Candida produces gliotoxin also to suppress the immune system and about 79 other bad toxins, basically. But it also produces acetaldehyde, which is a big deal. I'll explain why in a minute, why the acetaldehyde is so much of a problem. But how prevalent in it is it? Well, you know, if you look, it'll say, well, maybe 25% of the population has a yeast infection. To me, that is way off. I think most people have a yeast infection today. And, you know, around maybe, well, it's really had to do with the antibiotics. We started at some point, I know my kids are were born in this early 70s. And when they were babies, doctors, pediatricians were just giving antibiotics out like candy. And so they get sick and then they get well, and then they get sick again and get well. So they had a lot of antibiotics.
I mean, that's exactly how I grew up. You know, I grew up and I had strep throat. My mom would take me to the doctor and antibiotics and I'd get better. And a few months later, mm-hmm. sick again. And same thing. It was just this, you know, this ever evolving door of antibiotics. And it really, you know, messed up my system growing up. So I, you know, definitely
it created yeast. To that. Yep. Yeah. It created a yeast infection. So
how does that create a yeast infection?
Oh, the antibiotics, they kill the good bacteria in the gut. Mm-hmm. And then what's left over are yeast. They are normally present in the gut anyway, but when there's no other bacteria to hold them in check, they become pathogenic. They grow tentacles. They bury into the side of the mucosal lining. They create a whole lot of infection in the lining of the gut, and then the gut lining becomes permeable, and they just move right on through into the body and become systemic. So eventually, you know, doctors, pediatricians started waking up thinking, for a couple of reasons, you know, we're creating yeast infections, and also these bacteria are becoming more and more resistant to the antibiotics anyway. So they, you know, they're more mindful, I think, about giving babies antibiotics. But a lot of times the parent insists on it. You know, your child's screaming with an ear infection. Somebody comes in with a really painful urinary tract infection, and they'll give them a bacteria. They should test, because if it's a yeast infection, you need an antifungal. If it's a bacterial infection, say causing the urinary tract infection, then yeah, you can use an antibiotic. But we, you know, it's just rampant into today. And so I would say it's, in my opinion, at least when people are not well and they come to someone for help, they have candidiasis, and you should just assume they do. You're better off assuming that you do. So every child that I've ever worked with, by the way, there's one point where I had a program called Bedrock, Body Ecology Diet Recovering Our Children. They were the first children to start ever recover from autism. So I had a lot of parents, a couple thousand parents and practitioners at one point. And I talked to many, 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 we got lots of feedback. And every baby is born with the yeast infection, which is another factor in why they have autism. Moms have it too. So a high sugar diet is a major reason why we have, you know, like, for example, you would have had the antibiotics and then you probably would have eaten sugar. Your mother would not have known to take you on a low carb, sugar-free diet. And then pregnancy is actually very much contributing to candidiasis. I think I have a slide that explains that better. And we don't have strong immune systems. We have weak immune systems for lots and lots of reasons. Most of all, I mean, one major reason is because we have we're supposed to have this microbiome in our gut. I used to say inner ecosystem because no one had invented that term yet. Years ago, I was the first one to start talking about this world in our gut and how critical it was for immunity. Well, we know 70% of the immune system is in the gut, basically, in the gut-associated lymph tissue. So we don't have healthy guts, so we don't have a healthy immune system. Stress is just always prevalent in our life today, and we all are under stress. And then a lot of women take the birth control pill, and that makes things worse, because the birth control pill makes a woman estrogen dominant. And then if you are taking, as I mentioned before, antibiotics, but even other drugs like steroids, not NSAIDs. And if you're an alcohol drinker, you're going to be creating candida in your gut, in your body systemically. So for women, because of their estrogen, the way it fluctuates and all, and their progesterone, their hormones make it much, much more difficult. But as I mentioned before, don't exclude babies and men. They may not, complain about it. You know, one of the most common things, even Hippocrates talked about thrush in babies. Thrush is a yeast infection in the mouth. I've seen that in many people with cancer. Please watch for that, because if you've started going through chemo, radiation, and so on, and your immune system is seriously suppressed, you get thrush in your mouth, you have candida, and it makes you far more at risk for dying. So a good doctor, the cancer doctor, should know to give you a prophylactic before you even do the chemo. Anyway, I've dealt with that before. So candida, mold, parasites, they're all connected. They're all related. I mean, they're all part of why we get cancer. And really, it's because they've got the toxins, and those toxins are damaging the DNA. Now, this is another thing I see all the time. No one talks. We all are talking about genes and DNA now, but people aren't talking about damage to the DNA. That's the cause of cancer. If you damage your DNA, cancer is going to happen. So I think that's kind of well known in the world of genes and DNA and all. They know that DNA damage causes cancer. You don't even have to argue with that. So what happens when these, when the cell and the DNA inside the cell is damaged, it'll kill the cell, or it becomes a mutant, misbehaving, abnormal cell, which is what we all know cancer is. Now, getting back to that acetaldehyde, that molecule secreted by the yeast, it's a very bad, there's a lot of research on acetaldehyde because when you drink alcohol, you produce acetaldehyde. So for all these people that are alcoholics, there's a huge amount of research on acetaldehyde. You can spend 2 or 3 days just typing in acetaldehyde, looking at all the research that comes up. But people don't realize that candida produce acetaldehyde. And it's a very dangerous toxin that causes cancer. Now, if you have cancer and you go and you go through chemo and radiation and all, that alone suppresses your immune system. And the acetaldehyde suppresses your immune system. But I highly recommend that people look into acetaldehyde. It's what our body creates when we drink. But now what if you have yeast in your body 24/7 producing acetaldehyde, causing cancer? It causes all kinds of other problems. It affects the brain very much. You know, when someone gets drunk, how their brain is clearly change their behavior and all. Well, the acetaldehyde, that's why people can get a yeast infection and literally feel drunk or even act drunk because of the acetaldehyde. So it's a major player. I mentioned, though, that there are more than 75 other serious toxins being produced by the yeast, including gliotoxin, which is produced also by the mold. And then now we have these genes in our body. We have obviously many, many genes in our body. And some genes are specifically there to repair the damage. But there's a lot of reasons why those DNA repair genes aren't working. If your immune system is weak, they don't work. If you've got this chronic inflammation in your body because you have a systemic infection like candidiasis, mold, or whatever, that inflammation created by the infection, that alone keeps those DNA repair genes from working. So there they are causing the damage to the DNA, and then you can't repair them with your DNA repair genes. So we make a lot of free radicals in our body, superoxide, hydrogen peroxide, and so on. And ammonia is a big one. They're actually they're damaging the DNA, and at the same time, they're damaging the repair genes. So So there's a whole lot of those. I get frustrated because people always want to talk about heavy metals and polluted air and chemicals and everything, but people never talk enough about the toxins that our body's producing all the time. They're called endogenous toxins. And I put them up in the screen, superoxide, hydrogen peroxide, ammonia, and the genes that, like, for example, the SOD gene is supposed to come along and negate the superoxide toxin. It turns it into hydrogen peroxide. Another gene comes along called catalase, C-A-T. It turns the hydrogen peroxide into oxygen and water, which is good, and glutathione, which is good. So looking at the genes is another genetic variance. The genes not working properly is another reason our DNA is not able to, the repair genes aren't able to work very well. So when there's when the cell is damaged, here's what it can do. It can either become senescent, which means it kind of goes into the suspended state. It's a toxic cell, but it's not dead, but it's not alive either. Or it can commit suicide, which is what you want it to do. That's called apoptosis. Or it becomes a tumor and you get that unregulated cell growth. So I think you can begin to see the picture here of how all this ties together.
Yeah, I just wanted to add right here to that because, you know, this is so important for people to understand that, you know, we know chronic inflammation directly causes cancer. It is directly causative of cancer. And we know, and you're really explaining in so much detail, you know, candida and parasites cause chronic inflammation in the body. So we know there's a directly correlative causative effect between, you know, parasites and candida in your body and cancer, right? It's just
absolutely.
It's very clear. I mean, because of that chronic inflammatory response that's continuously happening within the body.
And you know, the interesting thing, Nathan, is that I still constantly bump into people that act like cancer is a mystery. You know, well, how do you get cancer? And then I'll tell them, and they, oh no, it can't be that. But so, you know, that's why this summit and this kind of information is so important to get out, because if you know what causes it, you can fix it.
Right.
So absolutely right about these chronic infections. I think that they're way under, looked at and appreciated. And also after, let's say you have Lyme disease or candidiasis, you think you've gotten over it, and or the Lyme disease, it looks like you've gotten over it. For many, many people, there's inflammation that continues long after you address the issue. And I'm seeing that with COVID-19 long haulers. Yeah, they got, you know, the virus looks like it's gone now, but this inflammation never calmed down and they're getting all kinds of symptoms based on that. So it's called unresolved inflammation. It's an important new area of research, and that's going on as well. Now, you know, so we have these DNA repair genes, but one of the most important group of them are the SIRT genes. There's seven of them. SIRT 1 and 3 are especially well known for anti-aging. You know, if you can keep those genes, the SIRT gene 1 and 3 working well, you're going to age more slowly. And so they do so much more than you think. They are also controlling apoptosis to get rid of that, you know, so the cell will die as it becomes more toxic and useless, basically. They control inflammation too. They control the immune response. They control the circadian rhythm clocks in the body. And they control how the cells respond to stress too. So right, a couple of supplements that are real popular right now is NAD plus, you know, that, or, and then, but also I like to tell people to take niacinamide, which is B3, a form of B3 that's the precursor to NAD or NAD plus. So that's B3. And so taking a lot of niacinamide, like 2 capsules, 3 times a day is smart, particularly if you're an alcoholic. It very often helps alcoholics stop drinking. And, but also resveratrol, which we've all heard a lot about. Those are really important supplements for these SIRT genes, which are then going to control all these other functions in the body. Now, how do you make your sirtuins work better? Well, autophagy, which means that you're going to go to sleep, you're going to get into this state of deep sleep, and then the body starts to kind of recycle the valuable part of the cell and use it over again and get rid of what the part of the cell that's not useless anymore. That's called autophagy. And then calorie restriction, and which is hard to do, but time-restricted feeding is not hard to do. I didn't know the term time-restricted feeding, but I've been doing it for many, many years, partly because in college, I didn't have any money. I had to put myself through college and, you know, I didn't go out and have breakfast in the morning and I really didn't like breakfast. So I won't eat until about maybe, you know, noon, 11:30, 12, 1 o'clock, most of the time. So, and then I'll finish certainly eating by say 8 o'clock. So that's a long window of time when you're not eating. That's time-restricted feeding. For me, that's about an eight-hour window where I do eat, and then the rest of the time I'm not eating. You might not be able to wait. You know, 8 hours might be too hard for you to do, but it's an incredibly important thing to do for actually getting rid of these infections and controlling this chronic inflammation, this unresolved inflammation. It's just like everywhere you look, time-restricted feeding is playing a positive role, especially in anti-aging. Now, if you are eating what are called foods with polyphenols in them, like, dark green leafy vegetables, olive oil, dark chocolate, curcumin is an amazing supplement. I think everybody should take curcumin. Ginseng, ginger, and the dark berries. Those are all shown to improve the health of the sirtuins. And then coffee and tea also have are rich in polyphenols. They may or may not be good for you. I'll explain why in just a minute. So I think that curcumin, DHEA, zinc, melatonin even has been shown to make these sirtuin genes work better. There's a website I was even going to send people to, Simland. I put it up in the screen here at simland.com, and he has a whole paper, a whole article on how to increase sirtuins for longevity. That's an important article to read because he really explains what sirtuin genes are and how to repair them and all. So I think people really need to learn that. It's not something we're being taught. Now, getting more to parasites, there's nobody that doesn't have them. You might say, well, I'm not seeing them. You don't see them because small intestine is really long. That's where they are mostly. You can easily have them in the colon. And if you do colonics, you can wash them out fairly easily. You know, in a few sessions, you can get them all out of the colon in 4 or 5, 6 sessions, but not out of the small intestine. And that's where they're really living and reproducing. And that's where they're secreting their toxins. Now, you know, the small intestine is also where, when we eat our food and the food gets into the small intestine, it gets absorbed up into the body. So imagine how you're absorbing those parasite toxins constantly 24/7 also. So they do need to be gotten out. And I have a special way that I like to teach people about colon therapy where there's another whole long talk in itself, which I know we don't have time for, but that's the best way to get them out with a type of colon therapy that the water goes in, it stays, you want to fill up the colon, even though you would maybe, let's say you're doing a colonic, Dr. Keneally Center. So you want the colon therapist to put the water in very, very, very slowly so you don't feel it going in. So then it's going to move around any material that's there. Of course, the person's going to need to release and you release that material, but then you keep filling up, adding more water. And the goal is to completely get the colon filled up. Well, a lot of colon therapists don't do that properly because as soon as the client says, well, I want to release, they open up the knob and then everything flows out. But the well-done colonic, to do it properly, you only let out the release that's ready to come out at that moment. And then you start filling, adding more water. Because your goal again is to get the entire colon filled up. And then all this soaking starts to occur 10, 15 minutes into the clonic. You start releasing all this material way over here. The small intestine is designed to open up and let things out when the colon empties. So the small intestine can release a lot of toxic substance in the middle of the clonic or during the clonic. But if you start to soften so that all that soaking soaks what's up in this, the material up in the small intestine, as that soaks and starts to drop out down into the colon and come out of the body, then the parasites can't stay there anymore. So when you get to that point during when you're starting to do clonics and all this black sludgy stuff comes out for a while, that's when the parasites start coming out. And I have a picture that my favorite colon therapist that I've known for years, who's done thousands of clonics, he takes pictures all the time of what come out of people. So I got to talk him into giving me one. Yeah, I mean, you send me a whole bunch, I picked this one. So this is what's inside of people. Isn't that unbelievably just gross, disgusting, shocking? And that's how people feel when they start to see this stuff come out. They're like grossed out, also relieved to get it out of them because it completely changes everything about their health. So yeah, parasites are big, biofilms are big, they're living in there together with a group of them. This one really wasn't one of the best ones. I've got some that he sent me, which can easily see the parasite inside, but this one is pretty impressive.
You know, I was just interviewing one of the doctors over at the Cancer Center for Healing. And, you know, he was telling me he had a patient recently who had no idea he had parasites, right? And they did one of the bioenergetic scans that they use there, and they can identify through frequencies what kinds of parasites the patients have. They don't even have to do stool samples or anything like that anymore. They can use frequencies, which I thought was fascinating. I said, well, how accurate is it? How do you know it's actually working and all this? They said, well, the results from the patients. So they had one. You know, so the patient found out through this scan that they had parasites. And so he put them through the treatments there. And within 24 or 48 hours, that patient went home, felt like they had a little bit of diarrhea or something. They went to go, release in the toilet. And they thought, okay, I just pooped out regularly. And they looked down, they saw a 3-foot tapeworm in the toilet.
I've heard those stories for so long.
Within a couple of weeks, that patient, all of a sudden, they lost, I can't remember exactly, it's like 8 to 14 pounds. They felt so much better. They had mm-hmm. this inside of them and had no idea that it was causing all these problems in their life. I mean, it's just fascinating.
Yeah. He sent me over a good number of tapeworm pictures. You have to see it to believe it. You just can't believe that's inside of us because there's not a lot of, signs or symptoms, except like you said, you're angry and frustrated and depressed, and your body changes shape, especially cellulite. Like, women don't appreciate this. If you do get rid of them, do these clinics, you have gotten rid of your cellulite. Permanently gotten rid of the cellulite too. So they're causing big problems, and I wish more people would focus on them. There are herbs. I'm sure people are sitting here thinking, well, what about the herbs? Well, yes, yes. A lot of times I'll send people to Anne Louise Gettleman's, I'm trying to think of the name of her company, Unikey. She's got a really good parasite cleanser, but that's good too. But I wouldn't ever recommend anybody go on a parasite cleanse using herbs without at least doing enemas, because like we have a great product for dissolving biofilms, and it comes with a special form of magnesium to definitely keep moving things out. But some people, their peristaltic movement is so weak, or there's too much gas and bloating, they don't eliminate the dissolved the biofilm with all the parasites and things inside of it. They're not getting it out. So I think it's really, really important to do clonics or enemas with at a time like that. I've also found...
How would you time those together? Would you just be doing your, you know, different parasite cleanse, for example? You can do, you know, they're usually cycle on and cycle off, right? Usually every couple mm-hmm. of weeks or a few weeks you're on and then off a week because they, you know, hatch and all of that. And you mm-hmm. might take it for 30 days or 60 days or 90 days, depending on the protocol. But would mm-hmm. you, what would you recommend people do in terms of colonics? In addition to any kind of cleansing they're doing, you do a colonic once a week? Are you just doing it simultaneously with mm-hmm. the cleanse a couple times a week? Yeah, what do you recommend there?
Well, I've seen people start in a parasite cleanse, and on day two, they've started getting sick. So I would say that by day two, you should have you know, the colonic scheduled, or if you're someone who has a Kalima board, which is a very nice tool to use. If you can't afford colonics, you can set a Kalima board up in your home. It's a board that one end of it has a splash guard on it and a hole, and that sits over the toilet. And then they're made out of fiberglass. I usually send people to a company called Kolenz, Kolenz.com, Kolenz.com. And the other end of it's sitting on a chair that you move up to the toilet. And then the person just gets on there, they're pushed, you know, their bottom goes to where the splash guard is. And then there's a bucket that'll sit on the back of the toilet, or you could hang it on the wall. But anyway, that has 5 gallons of water. So you're getting a nice cleanse to use something like that. I highly recommend to put the two together, the colon cleansing with the parasite, destroying the parasites, because they don't necessarily die. They just become disturbed, particularly if you're using a biofilm buster. Ours is called Echo Oxyzyme. You're starting to dissolve that wall that they live in, this fortress, and then they're vulnerable. They're vulnerable to that medication that you're putting in there. So the three, the biofilm buster, along with the herbs that are killing the parasite, are certainly at least disturbing it, and then rinsing it, starting that process that you're moving it on out. That's an ideal combination to do those three together.
Beautiful.
So can you cure Candida? This is a really big question. I mean, I had to bring this up because I sat there with Dr. Crook years ago and he said, we don't think this can be cured. And I thought, oh no, you can, I'm sure there's an answer. I'm going to find it. And I've actually come full circle and I would say, no, you can't cure candidiasis, you can't. And so you can manage it, but you can't cure it. And so how do you manage it? And why can you not cure it? Well, first of all, it's very stealth, like it can become a big issue and then escape the immune system. It can go from its dangerous form where it's forming tentacles to go back to a harmless form, just like that. So the immune system can't even detect it. Anyway, it's naturally present in our body anyway. And it's so easy to turn it from a harmless form into a pathogenic form that at any time, for the reasons I mentioned, the antibiotics, the stress, you know, and so on that I talked about in the beginning, for any of those reasons, it can now become pathogenic. So I agree with Dr. Crook. You can't get rid of it. But we have to be able to control it, and there's a way to do that. So diet is the most important thing. And this isn't just true for candidiasis, this is true for mold. Lots and lots of people right now are suffering from mold. Again, the organic acid test will tell you if you have yeast and mold in the digestive tract with these markers on the test. So that's a good way to test for it. Even if you don't have anyone to test you, you should do this because chances are excellent you will respond very well with any candida diet. At the same time, you must build the immune system. And that's where the gut comes in. 70% of the immune system is in the gut. So you've got to do them together. You've got the diet's got to starve out the yeast because nothing lives if it's starving, it will die. The die-off is an uncomfortable period. Sometimes people feel absolutely wonderful in the beginning because they're eating right and everything, but then the yeast start to die and you can feel very, very sick unless you do the colon therapy too. So to me, That's another, that should have been on that slide right there. It should say diet, rebuild the immune system and cleanse the colon. Anyway, so diet's key. And the diet has to be totally not have any sugar in it whatsoever. And you know, years ago, people were real into raw foods and they were doing juices with beets and carrot juice. That's so much sugar. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, everybody's just really think this is healthy. And yet they're feeding, this is sugar. This is a lot of sugar. Sugar feeds yeast. Sugar feeds cancer. You will die if you continue to eat, eat the sugar and feed the cancer. So that's a must. I'm sure everybody that's been on this summit, that you've interviewed so far, I'm sure everyone has said that repeatedly. But I've learned over the years to kind of fine tune the diet even more. And of course, the diet's all outlined in the book I have called The Body Called You Diet. But over the years, I've learned more. We've all learned more. So one of the things we know is the yeast make oxalates. And oxalates are these, they're in plants. They're never in animal proteins. I think it's one of the reasons people are feeling good on these high animal protein diets is because they're avoiding plants, and the plants do have poisons in them. And if you don't have a healthy gut, you're going to start reacting to those plant poisons. Well, oxalates are these tiny little crystals, microscopic, tiny little crystals in the plant that when the insect comes along and eats the plant, it tears up their teeth. So they avoid it. If we didn't have oxalates in the food and the plants and the insects ate all the plants, we would never have evolved. I mean, we wouldn't be here. So it's a good thing. And nature puts a bacteria in our gut called Oxalobacter firmigenes, which is wiped out by antibiotics. Now, that little bacteria is one and only job is to eat oxalates. But when he's gone, and he often becomes one of those missing microbes, and it never comes back. Now you have nothing eating, getting rid of the oxalates in the gut. So they get into the body and they cause stones. So I'm a big believer on avoiding high oxalate foods. And I don't know, there's so many healthy things we're eating today, chocolate and soy. Fermented soy is okay, like miso soup, but you know, people that are vegetarians and eating a lot of soy, they're getting a huge amount of oxalates. You may or may not know that you're creating oxalate stones in your body because a lot of them are going into the bones, weakening the bones. Bones are where our stem cells are produced. They go into the lungs, they can go into the brain, they can go into the eyes, into the muscles, they go everywhere, and you don't always feel them. But many people do, and they come across as pain, joint pain, muscle pain, and eye pain. The oxalates are a big, big problem in the autism community. But why? Because of the yeast. The yeast are producing oxalates. So again, the high oxalate foods, you almost can't. I mean, there are some foods that are low oxalates, and that's a good place to start. But you know, and a lot of people say, don't just drop all the oxalates and go on a no oxalate diet because you'll get what's called the oxalate dumping, which is really uncomfortable. Also, where a whole bunch of the oxalates are dumped in your bloodstream. And then now you've got all these symptoms again, the pain, for example. Well, there are certain foods like chocolate, which is super popular, all the nuts and seeds that people are eating, especially the popular ones like almond and cashews, almond milk, cashew milk. Sunflower butter is a low oxalate. Pistachios are lower. Flax seeds are lower. Chia seeds are super high. So you want to look up the list of high oxalate foods and please stay off the high oxalate ones. And then that's going to be a big, big difference in how you feel and how you ultimately get well. Now, a whole lot of people are dealing with histamine. It's another really popular thing out there. Someone with a histamine problem has a gut problem and they have a yeast problem. So that's important too. So you can also go look up the foods that are super high in histamine and avoid those, the high histamine foods. But some of the high histamine foods, well, they'll always tell you avoid fermented foods. Well, here's what I'd like to say about that. First of all, for some fermented foods, wine, beer, kombucha, they're super high in yeast, and you definitely want to eliminate those. But I've been teaching people to eat fermented vegetables for years. And our vegetables, the way we make them, are high in a bacteria called Lactobacillus plantarum. Plantarum actually degrades oxalates and degrades histamine. So it's a good bacteria to put in the gut. So if you're eating a small amount of fermented vegetables with Lactobacillus plantarum, you can't put that in the same category as the kombucha or the wine or the beer. So, you know, we do that all the time. We like lump all these foods together into one category and say, okay, avoid all of them. Well, you know, if you start off by avoiding all things, all the high histamine foods, including the fermented vegetables, maybe for 2 weeks, then you can lower that, you know, it's like having a bucket, as people often describe it, and you've lowered the amount of, you know, the histamine, and then you can add a little bit more back in. You can have a small amount. That small amount should be the fermented vegetables with the plantarum to control the histamine. And then, so one of the things that yeast are doing is they're taking amino acids. Like, for example, they will take arginine and ornithine, and they'll convert it into something called putrescine, which is a gut toxin. And then they'll take tryptophan and convert it into another product called indican, which is all indications that you're not digesting protein. So the diet has to be very, very mineral rich, dark green leafy vegetables, even sea vegetables, if you can work those in. Take minerals. Put minerals in your tea and water and things that you're drinking, because you're going to alkalize. It's important to alkalize, because as long as your body's acidic, the yeast will keep on growing. And so I'm a really, really big believer in cruciferous vegetables, and they help with that estrogen excess that's fueling the yeast infection as well. Now, so those two amino acids that I was talking about, the indican, that comes from tryptophan, which is a protein in meat, or you can take a supplement. So don't take tryptophan. You're better off taking 5-HTP or taking the melatonin if that's why you're taking it. The putrescine comes from the yeast converting arginine and ornithine into putrescine. The name alone tells you it's putrescine is like a toxic, you know, metabolite in the gut. So one of the things, because of that, Vita Ecology does not recommend a high protein diet like paleo or carnivore. A lot of people do keto, which is supposed to be, you know, you're getting your fat, you're getting your energy from fats, but they'll do it with a lot of protein. You don't want to do that if at the time that you have yeast and mold. Maybe later on down the road, but again, because we know what the yeast are doing, converting these amino acids into these toxic byproducts, not a high protein diet. So I usually have said for years, 80% vegetables, 20% animal protein, not high protein. So I mentioned earlier, time-restricted feeding. I labor people to have one large meal a day, then smaller meals. They can take a protein shake, like we make a great one, delicious one, that has, it's called a probiotic protein shake, but that can be one of the meals. And ideally, if you can make it work for you, have your protein midday. You'll sleep better at night if you don't have protein late at night or last thing at night. So there's, go ahead.
The 80-20 in terms of the, 80-20% veg, 80% veggies, 20% animal protein. Now, I know a lot of people, you know, especially a lot of health experts in our field, really focusing on trying to do things that help people advance in their own lifestyle, right? So many people won't give up meat. They won't give up beef. It's like they just absolutely will not give it up. So you say, okay, reduce it, right? Reduce the amount of intake. We know that, you know, excessive animal product consumption absolutely is linked to cancer and higher risk of cancer, prostate
good
cancer.
Point.
Right? All
it's
these
acidic.
Things.
It's an acidic food. Your vegetables are alkalizing. You want that ratio to be more like 80% vegetables, a little bit of acidic. Make sure you digest the protein. That's another issue. Huge problem. A lot of people are not digesting protein. Undigested protein creates another toxin in the body called ammonia. I actually did a podcast with Ari Whitten on ammonia because no one talks about ammonia. I don't think Ari even really got how important it was, but we're creating a lot of ammonia in our body, and it's just another toxin to have to deal with. So, you know, I mean,
recommend people, I mean, who really want to go the next level to just completely get animal protein out of their body?
No, because there are nutrients in animal protein, like B12, for example, but they can take a supplement.
You take supplement, yeah.
It depends. Like one of the chapters in my book is on blood type.
You know what they found, though, if you saw this, I don't know if you saw this study, but they actually went and studied, can't remember the large number, but it was a very large number of people who eat meat on a regular basis. And they actually found there were nearly as many people who are B12 deficient who eat meat as vegans who are B12 deficient. So it's not
probably they're not digesting meat. That meat.
Yeah.
It's not about eating it.
Or digesting it maybe, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Metabolizing it, getting it into the cell.
Yeah.
So yeah. That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. It was something I saw recently too, but yeah, I'm just asking because I know, you know, like all the research I've done, you know, we became plant-based in my family like probably 10, 11 years ago when my daughter was born. And the reason we did is because, you know, all the research at that time had led me to, you know what, if I want to live the longest and healthiest I possibly can, you know, all the research shows just avoid animal products altogether. And you're going to heal faster. And I've seen that again and again and again from all the people that I've interviewed who went to a plant-based diet and did a lot of the other things we're talking about in this symposium as well, who were able to reverse cancer, even stage 4 cancers, you know?
Now, that's a really important point, Nathan. I'm glad you brought that up because there are different types of cancer. There are brain cancers and leukemia and non-Hodgkin's. I have only ever worked with 5 people with cancer and they all lived. Mm. The last person was had brain cancer. He had a tumor that they had been treating for 5 years. Then they did another chemotherapy and then a new one came up in the back of his brain. And so they couldn't operate on either one of them because he would have lost certain functions, you know, speech or walking or something. And so that's when they called me in because I knew his fiance. And so he was really, really religious about doing it, but I have my experience with brain cancer is a vegetarian diet. Mm. So what Rich did was he got his proteins from, you know, quinoa and millet, for example, and a lot of green vegetables. We actually, his fiance had to go out of town for a couple of weeks, and I literally had us over there cooking for him to make sure that he got what he needed. And now he's very active, is very athletic, you know, which is important too, because you're moving those toxins in and around. And so in 6 weeks, I had him on very high dose vitamin D. I can't remember. That was an important thing too, I think. So like 50 milligrams was high dose. But anyway, 6 weeks later, when he went back over to Cedars-Sinai, they checked and they came out to say, well, good news, your tumor, the new one, had shrunk 50%.
Wow.
So I thought they'd call me and say, oh, what did you do? But they didn't. And then 6 weeks later, it was gone. And 8 months later, this one was scar tissue.
Wow. That's incredible.
And I think he eats pretty normally today. You know, that was good while ago. 2 people I work with had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Absolutely. Well, one of them went down to the Gerson Institute, but she'd been on the body ecology diet for months. And then when she went down there and they had her doing all this juicing, she got worse and worse. And she started getting her feet, had toenails, had fungus on it. And anyway, there was a group of them that started at the same time and she was the only one that lived. Then she came back to Georgia where we were both living. And she told me at the time, and then she went back on the diet. Well, I have in her case and the other 900, what I did was they were getting their protein from fermented raw goat milk. and a lot of vegetables and completely raw. So the whole diet was raw except for the raw goat milk. So, and that was it. And they did really well. They felt fantastic. You know, the raw goat mix was putting good bacteria in the gut and everything. So sometimes I don't even know exactly why it worked. It's just my intuition said, let's do this. It worked. Anyway, her name was June, and she said that she's sure the only reason that she survived out of that group of people that went through the Gerson Institute together was that she had been on an antifungal diet. She'd been on the body ecology diet for months before she went down there, and she had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Wow. Yeah, there's a lot of good things about the Gerson diet, but there's also, you know, the high juicing of carrots and things like that. It's just too much sugar, you know?
Oh,
but the big salad,
absolutely the wrong thing to do.
Soups and stuff to eat every day as part of that is amazing, right? But then, as you're saying,
well, that part's the good part.
Infections, we've got to get that sugar out of the diet, and juicing high sugar vegetables like carrots and high sugar fruits like
and
apples.
Beets. And beets are the other one. And by the way, beets are incredibly high in oxalates. So what I tell people to do, because beets are very high in nitric oxide, which is really important for the immune system, for healthy gut and all, healthy blood pressure. So nitric oxide is good and beets are a great source. But I always tell people, ferment them. Ferment them with our starter. You get the benefits of the beets, but the oxalates are gone because the bacteria eat the oxalates up. That's why you can do fermented soy like miso. Now, fermented natto doesn't work because that's a real short fermentation of 24 hours. It's not enough to get rid of the oxalates, but miso soup is a wonderful. That's another thing for breast. I met a researcher. I was speaking at a Wise Traditions conference with Sally, and so I got there a little bit earlier and I had dinner with this man. His English wasn't too great, but he's Japanese, and he was a thyroid stem cell expert, but the miso makers in Japan had hired him to research miso and see what the benefits, miso soup and all, because you know, the Japanese will have miso soup 3 times a day even. And the reason they did that, all these miso companies, is that the young people weren't doing miso soup anymore. They wanted McDonald's. So they wanted to get some good research. So they hired this man, and he did a couple of years of research. And what he found is that the miso soup prevented breast cancer. He just worked with breast cancer women. And he said that in even some cases, they had 3 times a day, their cancer disappeared. So diet does play a very, very important role. And, but also I feel, you know, different types of cancer. I personally am a big believer in blood type. I have a chapter in my book on blood type. And the reason for that is that I I actually went as a patient to Dr. James D'Adamo, the father of Peter. Got all into blood type, like Anna Louise Kittleman also does. And, we both really believed in it and followed it. And over all these years, I've said to people, those are like 40 something years ago, I've said to people, what's your blood type? When I started working with kids with autism, I'd ask your mom, what's your blood type? What's your son's blood type? They're almost all blood type A. So an A is much more prone to cancer. Their body is much more likely to become acidic. So I do believe that they have to work a little bit harder to prevent and treat the cancer. But getting back to the amino acids and protein digestion, A's just simply lack the stomach acid to digest protein, animal protein. So they can do maybe amino acid broths. And by the way, you don't want to do a lot of collagen because collagen causes oxalates. So yeast, this is because of the yeast again, they have an enzyme that they use to break down the collagen and create oxalates from it. So it's, you know, it's like there's so much. That's why I'm so grateful to have this chance to share some of this. I hope people are taking notes, that they'll listen to this and, you know, buy this. This is very important information.
People will have to go through and listen to this again. I mean, there's no doubt about it. If you listen to this 3 or 4 times, in taking notes as you do, because there is so much good information here, and it is so worth it to really take notes and in a few days, give it a week, come back and listen to it again and watch it again. And these slides are really helpful as well, because you can visualize and write it down. But, you know, you start adding each of these things you're talking about over time, and that's when you see results, right? But there is so much information, as you're saying. So, you know, don't gloss over this. Make sure to come back and listen and hear it again, because it is some.
Well, you know, you said something important right there. So Body Ecology is based on 7 universal laws, and one of them is the principle of uniqueness. We're all very unique. So your approach to cancer is you've got to be uniquely based on your needs. And then step by step is another important one. And so you can't just take all this information and start doing it tomorrow, but you can take some things you're already doing, and other things you can just tweak a little bit and then start adding. It's good to have support so other people can help you add these things. But I think I'm toward the end of the slide. Can I just finish the last few slides?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. So getting back to the time-restricted feeding, absolutely essential for cancer. Am I going the wrong way? Nope. I didn't talk about this. Okay. So getting back to histamine and why it's a big problem for people, is a gut problem. Now, in the gut is an enzyme that degrades histamine, and it's called DAO. That's the diamine oxidase is the name of the enzyme. And it's suppressed by candida. So if you have candida or mold in your gut, that DAO enzyme is not going to work well, and you're going to have histamine problems. And also it's suppressed by estrogen too, by the way. And estrogen is a problem. Lots of women are estrogen dominant. A lot of men are estrogen dominant, especially as they get older and their testosterone goes down. But there's a parasite, getting back to parasites, called Blastocystis hominis. That parasite is really important to get rid of, because it disables, remember I said, mentioned nitric oxide and how important it was for the immune system and all. Well, it makes an enzyme that degrades arginine. So you never make nitric oxide, and you'll end up with a leaky gut. You'll end up with a lot of histamine. The more histamine you have, the more you're going to break down that gut barrier, the zonulin that people probably know all about. You're going to get that open inflamed gut, and then the yeast are going to walk right into the body. So you see, there's like kind of like all intertwined here. So histamine, you might think, okay, I have a histamine problem. Well, yes, you do, but you know, it is the gut, and you're puts you at risk for cancer. We need nitric oxide to have a healthy gut and to have a strong immune system too. So we have to fix the gut. So like that's where you start. Yeah. That's kind of a battle cry for a lot of functional medicine practitioners, is first fix the gut. So you want to remove bad things. You want to kill the candida, kill the mold, get rid of those parasites, get rid of the bad diet. You want to get rid of the biofilms too. So you can get rid of the candida, and you can't, it lives in a, all of these live in a biofilm. So you've got to dissolve that biofilm. You've got to repair the gut lining, because it's very inflamed. And you've got to then replace the gut microbiome. And all of these are literally a whole talk in themselves. But if you don't have a healthy immune system, if you don't fix the gut, you won't have a healthy immune system. It will be absolutely impossible to get rid of the yeast infection, all these infections, and get over cancer, basically. So I'm really, really big on studying the genes and looking at people's genes if I can get a genetic test. So one of the things I've found is connected to all this is the ALDH gene. It's an alcohol clearance gene. So if you have variants and you have these genes and they're not doing a good job of clearing alcohol, you're in trouble, because acetaldehyde is what the yeast are producing, and they won't be able to clear that acetaldehyde. I love chiolic garlic, by the way, because it's really good at reducing acetaldehyde. You want to look at the person's detoxification pathways. Like for the practitioners listening, that would be the methylation pathways. CBS is that pathway that goes down into making glutathione. You want to be sure that pathway is working. If the person has problems producing glutathione, then you need to know that, because you want to be doing glutathione. You can even get glutathione in drips, for example, IV drips. Dr. John Lorienz down in Sarasota has glutathione suppositories that I just love. They actually stay in the bloodstream. I think he told me 9 to 10, 11 hours the glutathione is in the bloodstream versus getting an IV drip of glutathione. And then, so your inflammation genes, they have names like interleukin 6 and 17 and so on. Their genes, if they're not working well, you're not controlling that inflammation. So if you get the infection of any kind, they're going to run wild. And so you can be sure that people that have this unresolved inflammation that's just always there, they do have problems with their interleukin genes or not. They have variants in those. And huge problem in autism. We've also found in the autism community, they have vitamin D receptor variants. So they're not getting that vitamin D into the cell, or they're not carrying it into the bloodstream. Vitamin D is super important for a healthy immune system, which I think everybody knows that. And then I like to look and see what variants, SNPs do you have that are going to make you nutrient deficient? B12, B2, magnesium, taurine, and for example, there's genes that produce those nutrients. So it's good to know what those, when they're not going to work too well, you can for sure supplement. So this is really a perfect example of being able to use that principle of uniqueness and give that person that support that's unique to them that makes them have a stronger immune system and a much greater, you know, likelihood of getting well. Everybody knows how important sleep is, but when you don't sleep well and when you've got too much stress, you're going to have elevated cortisol, and then hypothyroidism causes elevated cortisol. So, you know, we have to stay in control of your sugar. It's absolutely essential. You must control your blood sugar. Many, many people have genes. About 60% of us have genes that make us insulin resistant. So again, that low sugar diet is absolutely essential. And if you've got a lot of belly fat, you're going to have more cortisol. If you're eating low sodium, and I mean especially the sodium that you get out in processed foods, that sodium is really bad. A little bit of healthy salt, sea salt. I actually love a salt that Selena Naturally has. Selena Naturally, it's very high in, higher in, it's lower in sodium and higher in potassium. And it's called Makai. So I actually tell people, get the Makai salt. You can enjoy salt. But too much of it is going to raise your cortisol levels. And, then you're going to have runaway inflammation and you're not going to get well. And so as men become more and more testosterone deficient, as they get older, that deficiency is going to lower their So testosterone lowers cortisol, and you want testosterone in there lowering that cortisol because you don't want the cortisol to get out of hand and cause all kinds of problems. And then I kind of mentioned about the enemas and clonics and the klimas, so I won't go into that. But, you know, so the lymph system gets very, very toxic. As the gut gets toxic, the lymph system immediately gets toxic. And you, in order to have a healthy lymph system, you need to drink a lot of water, you need to be hydrated, but drinking water doesn't necessarily hydrate you, but colonics do, our enemas do. If you put do an enema and you put minerals in the water, you're going to get that, you're going to get more hydration, and that's really good for helping the lymph cleanse. The lymph is moving all these toxins around and, you know, gathering them and sending them out of the body. So it's, don't forget about your lymph system. That's important too. You'll have a much more efficient removal of toxins if you have a healthy lymph system. So clonics and enemas and so on, they play a key role in that. And also for die-off, you're going to have die-off for sure. As you're getting well, die-off is absolutely going to occur. That's when you want to take out your enema bucket, you know, in the morning before you go to work or at night, 2 or 3 days in a row until you feel fine again. And then you'll still keep healing and detoxing and everything, but you won't be miserable while you're doing it. There's a ton of supplements that are good for candidiasis. I mentioned chiolic garlic because of its amazing ability to control and get rid of acetaldehyde. So you'll take chiolic as, you know, they come in these tiny little tablets, and you want to take 2-3 times a day. Drinking Pau d'Arco tea, great. I like for people to supplement with taurine and biotin because they will be depleted for sure. And berberine is great for controlling blood sugar. You might want your doctor put you on metformin, but some studies have actually shown berberine to be as effective as metformin. I think everybody needs a binder. There's quite a few on the market, but you want to bind up the toxins in the gut as they're dying off. Time-restricted feeding. Now, drugs like nystatin and nizoral can be prescribed by your doctor. Nystatin is the healthier one. It only works in the gut, kills the bacteria and the mold in the gut. Nizoral has some side effects with the liver, but if you are undergoing chemo and all, you really should talk to your doctor about using these as a prophylactic. And I actually had that experience with my mother. She went through a rare form of, she got throat cancer, and she went through a new therapy they were trying out on people. And she totally burned her throat, and she died 3 years later. But when she was going through that therapy, she got unbelievable thrush in her mouth. So I called the doctor up and I said, "What are you giving her?" He said, "Well, it's new. We're trying it out." And I said, "Well, she's really bad thrush. So she has yeast throughout her body. This is dangerous, more dangerous even than her having the cancer. You need to put her on a prophylactic." He did a prophylactic. But the other thing was, she was going down to Miami for this special program, and there's like 8 or 9 treatments, and she made it all the way through 7. And when I was talking to him, I said, "Well, how many people are doing it? What do you know about this? How many people have made it?" And he said, "Well, most everybody won't even do the second or the third one because you're just too miserable." What I had done with her is, after she got the chemo, brought her back to where she lived in Jupiter, Florida, and with a colon therapist there, and she did colonic, which she felt, she's so sick. And after the colonic, she felt so much better. So enough so that the next Tuesday she went down and she got another one and another one and another one. Well, she refused to do the last one. But I realized later that the fact that she was actually, you know, getting the chemo and then getting those her detoxification pathways open with a colonic really helped her continue to be able to do the chemo. And so she was fine, but but her throat was burned from the radiation. And she insisted on eating yogurt with sugar in it all the time. So, you know, that type of cancer usually does come back in about 3 years, and that it did for her. And then she was ready to go. But she had a good death, actually. I always felt grateful that she didn't suffer for very long, really. And but I've had, you know, my own personal experience I just wanted to share. But anyway, that's a lot of stuff. Here's our website, bodyecology.com. We have lots of information and good supplements and all too, and very much focused on gut health and a lot of information. If we can get it out there, keep it out there, you know, with Google taking all of our information out, it's hard for many of us. I don't know if the public knows that right now, but many of us are struggling with trying to keep information out on the web because they really want everything to come from WebMD. So it's getting harder and harder to be able to tell people the truth. That's why I think events like this are so important. Can't trust the internet, that's for sure.
Yeah, thank you, Donna. I mean, that is really sad state of affairs that we're facing right now, is, you know, the largest social media giants and, you know, information pathways that, you know, we've all depended on for so long. I mean, they're censoring, you know, and they're censoring scientifically validated information to help people mm-hmm. with health.
Well, you know, Google is in partnership with one of the major companies. I think is the company called something XanthoSmithKline. Do you know that name of it? Mm-hmm. That one, whatever. I know I'm pronouncing it wrong, but it's a major drug company, and Google's in their partners, and they have been for about 6 years. So the goal is to take away our kind of information and censor and put up just what they want you to know. So again,
Facebook, for example, you know, shut down my ad account. They've shut down many of our colleagues' entire Facebook pages who've had millions of followers. They just, you know, shut down Mercola and everything he's mm-hmm. doing.
Joe, Josh Axe, Sergi, many of us.
So you're right. It's these kinds of events that we can continue mm-hmm. reaching and helping people. And it's up to our listeners and viewers here, you know, wherever you're hearing this, whenever you're hearing it, you know, one, to take as much action on this information as possible so you can see the own changes in your life. But then two, share what you're learning with others so that they can take back control of their health. And three, share this event and this information and, you know, Donna's website with everybody you know. Share it on your social channels. Share it everywhere you possibly can, because the truth is, you know, they're these big conglomerates, for you know, all their political and financial reasons, are censoring all this important information. But we, the people, have the power. And the more you share, the more you help get this information out, the more impact we can make. So, you know, bodyecology.com, go there right now. Donna has some amazing products there that I encourage you to take a look at. You know, I've been looking at your probiotic protein shake, which looks amazing with fermented vegetables and really great probiotics. I know
tastes good, delicious. Yeah,
I know you have
which is nice
sweeteners as well, which mm-hmm. I think is important for people, right? Like stevia, mm-hmm. and monk fruit.
Yeah, because we're gonna want that sweet taste. It's a normal, you know, we should like sour, salty, sweet, and so it's hard to avoid it. So there are stevia, for example, which was nothing. It was like hidden in a, just discovered in a lab in China. So I brought it, I found it, and I brought it over here and started teaching people about it and fighting the FDA for a while. People helped me, of course. You know, so we have it. It's in all kinds of things now, but there's Lakanto from Japan, which is a popular sweetener over there that's great for baking, and it's better in coffee than stevia is. And we have a new one coming out that's really going to be great. Because you need alternative sweeteners. You don't, you know, and another thing too, let's say that you're craving sugar. What I tell people to do is pour a glass of water, put some lemon juice in it or lime juice, and squeeze in, say, stevia or sweetener, and drink that. Because as soon as your brain thinks it's had something sweet, particularly if it's hydration, you know, a lot of times you're actually craving it because you're dehydrated. So that's a great thing to do. You get the sweet taste, you get the hydration, and all of a sudden you're not craving sugar anymore. So we need little techniques like that, because I think everybody knows sugar is the last thing you're going to put in your body for cancer.
Yeah. And that's, you know, those are some great things that we can do, obviously. And, you know, Don, I just want to say thank you so much for, you know, your wealth of information, for being such an incredible pioneer in the space. And thank you for, you know, spending this time with us and with our audience here at the Global Cancer Symposium to share, you know, this wealth of information. As I told everybody a little bit ago, you know, make sure to go back through and listen to this again, because there's so much good information here. But really, start picking one, two, three things you can start mm-hmm. doing to help you move forward in implementing these important, you know, health enhancing practices into your life. As you said, people tuning in are probably doing quite a few of these, but there's always more we can do. So again, mm-hmm. Donna, I just want to say thank you so much. This has been incredible. It's been a treat to get to spend time with you and listen to you. And you know, you're
me
just
too.
A wealth
this is a treat.
Of knowledge. So thank you so much.
Thank you too, Nathan, and for doing this. I personally produced a couple of summits, and I got a couple more coming and down the road next year. And it's a lot of work to do this. It's just real dedication. So I hope people, you know, don't get to like say, "Oh, I already heard this the last cancer summit," because everyone will be, you know, people always sharing new information. And the way to really get good at something is to listen and listen and listen. over and over and over again. Even if you heard it before, it's good to hear it again. So thank you, Nathan, very much.
Absolutely. Thank you as well.
Thank you. And I want to thank everyone for tuning in to the Conquering Cancer Summit. Please share this with friends and family. Together, we truly can make a difference for the future of humanity in ending the cancer pandemic. Thank you, and I wish you ultimate health and happiness. Be well.